Eddie Huang may be known as much for his strong opinions as his delicious pork buns. He was on our show last month to discuss his memoir, Fresh Off the Boat. Today he joins me to talk a bit about the politics of food, from cultural assimilation to the co-opting of ethnic cuisines. Eddie's the proprietor of Bauhaus in the East Village, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our program. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
When it comes to most ethnic cuisines, there are always questions of authenticity and how Americanized the food is. How much should people think about those things when they go to a restaurant?
You know, it's a good question. And the word that I like to think about instead of authenticity is power. Because authenticity is, I don't think, a very good judge of food or the experience. It is nice to know that this is, per se, authentic, or this is an aspect of the culture that has been preserved and kind of frozen in time in this restaurant, and this is how you would be eating in, let's say, the 70s or 80s or 50s or 60s. And you like to know that, because I do think that the things I when examining food and politics together, like to see is respect, preservation, and progress.
Lydia Bastianich talks about her fondness for Italian-American food. She came from Italy mm-hmm. and was horrified initially, and then she had to cook it in a restaurant, developed some kind of a fondness for it. But I can't imagine there are too many Chinese chefs who have real fondness for egg foo young, chow mein, or mushu pork.
You know, I don't like egg foo young. I don't like chow mein. I don't like mushu pork, but I do love sesame chicken. And I do like lemon chicken. I like orange beef. You know, there's a lot of those things, but I kind of like those after, you know, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and when you're really high and drunk. So that's the time for American Chinese food.
Well, is it even possible to make truly authentic food when you're using ingredients that aren't from the country of origin?
You know, Leonard, to be honest, if to answer the question, yes, I think you can, but it's also something that I don't think about that much. My thing more is to say I'm an American-born Chinese person, and I very much respect Chinese food when I go back to China and eat it. But in my opinion, I think the best Chinese food I've had is in Taiwan, because after the war, a lot of the chefs fled to Taiwan and they brought the recipes with them. So per se, would that be authentic? Is that exactly how it was done for the emperors and in the imperial court? It's probably changed a little because it's in Taiwan, but that is the best version of it that I've had. So, and that's the one that I connect with. So,
well, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So for me, the question of authenticity, I don't think is a question that necessarily needs to be asked.
Well, it is important to people from the country of origin. For example, if you go to the local Chinatowns, there is a difference between the restaurants that have mostly Chinese customers and the ones that don't.
Yeah.
Because though the Chinese customers are demanding something that is much closer to home.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So that's you're hitting on something here. I think there's a difference between authenticity per se and serving a certain palate, because there are restaurants, like you say, in Chinatown, where there are chefs who are cooking for a certain palate, which is the local people, the regional palate. And for instance, with dim sum, there are a lot of different places. Nam Wah is a place that I like to frequent a lot, as well as Ping's. Ping's and Nam Wah are both very, very good in my opinion, and I do think they serve the same customer. Nam Wah is the oldest dim sum parlor in Chinatown. And for years, you know, it was dirty, people really didn't go there, and they renovated it. Now, it's attracting a new customer, but the food is still serving the people that have been going there for almost 100 years. And Ping's on the other side, on Mott Street as well, it's on Mott Street, they have a chef there who does a lot of innovative dim sum dishes that are kind of nouveau and interesting in Hong Kong, but it's for the same palate, so it feels seamless.
There's another one called Red Farm, Joe Ng, who is very innovative dim sum chef. But the Chinese often complained when I lived in Chinatown that all the best chefs were going to Vancouver or to other parts of Canada because of American immigration policies. And so we weren't getting the hottest new thing from Hong Kong.
Yeah, you know, it is, for instance, Ping's is a good example of a chef who is always kind of, there's always, every Sunday you go there, every Saturday, there's a couple different dishes and a different variation, and it's coming from his experience in Hong Kong or something, or from his own mind, but it's for the palate. Due to immigration, Vancouver has amazing Chinese food. There's a lot of, the diaspora is all over the place now.
Well, when we're talking about authenticity, isn't that a bit of complicated in itself? For example, Taiwan, which is your inspiration. Mm-hmm. Taiwan has been has undergone many waves of influences because it's been invaded more than once.
Yeah.
There's an indigenous people. There's the Chinese connection. Japan controlled the island for a while. And I suspect there's even some American influence there because of the presence of so many American military. So is there an authentic Taiwanese cuisine?
Yeah, and that's a question that I tell people that they need to, in a very Taoist way, it's a question that people need to let go. You know, you have to lose control to gain control. And I think that the thing is you want to acknowledge the history. You want to acknowledge it and you want to respect it and know that this is what it was like before the Japanese came. This is what it was like after the Chinese came. This is what it was like after, you know, the Fukienese came. And you like to know, but do you have to be cooking according to these rules of authenticity? I don't think so. I think you want to respect, you want to preserve, and you want to progress.
My guest is Eddie Huang, and we're talking about authenticity and appropriation. And we might even get into a few of the things that he discussed in his recent memoir called Fresh Off the Boat. There was a recent article in Bon Appetit that you wrote that in which you said that Taiwanese cooking has a lot of fermented, cured, and preserved food littered with offal and shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't most Americans run the other way when they hear the word offal? That's O-F-F-A-L.
Yeah, Americans outside of downtown New York, I think, do. You know, maybe in Portland, they run to it. You know, Austin, they run to it. There are these, like, little foodie towns in America. But, yes, for the most part, people run away from it.
So do these kinds of preparations and dishes show up much in Chinese restaurants? I know there are still many Chinese restaurants that have two menus.
I personally don't run into the two menus much. The only variation of the two menu I see is when the specials are written in Chinese on the wall. So I guess if that's considered a secret menu, I guess so. But in my experience, when I've asked, they've read it, and because I can't read most of the characters. But restaurants, offal is very prevalent in Chinese food. I always get tripe. You know, there's pieces of lung. There's beef tendon I like a lot. I like chicken feet. I like offal a lot.
Stomach,
yeah. It's all very good.
Well, Chinese people suggested to me that the way to order in a traditional Chinese restaurant, you know, but a good one, is that you tell the waiter how much money the table wants to pay, and he should propose a menu because the chef knows what's good. If you say, you know, we really would like to not have food that's Americanized, they will bring out a proposal. You can then suggest some changes, and you'll wind up with a much more interesting menu than you ever would have if you just ordered from the American menu.
Yeah, no, you know what? You hit on something again interesting here. In colloquial usage, it does help in a restaurant to say authentic or traditional. I want authentic. I want traditional. I want chuantong. You know, that's the word that we'll use. I also like to say, what are your zhao pai cai? All right, so if you go to a Chinese restaurant and say, zhao pai cai, meaning like what are your like banner items? What are you known for here?
Your signature dishes.
Signature dishes, exactly. And so, you know, in regular usage, it does help to say authentic or traditional because they'll point you in the right direction. For our discourse on the Leonard Lopez show, I try not to use authentic.
In your memoir, you write that if you grow up in an immigrant culture, there are going to be foods you eat that others just don't get.
Mm-hmm.
What in Taiwanese food have you found to be harder to sell than others?
Oh, the number one is always stinky tofu. I love stinky tofu. It was something that I came around to when I was 7 or 8 years old. And it's almost like for Asians, it's like eating cheese. The first time I had cheese, I didn't get it. It smelled and was funky to me. But just like cheese, stinky tofu, it's that pungent, stinky, you love it. You grow to love it.
But isn't it just used as a kind of a flavoring? You don't order a dish of stinky tofu, do you?
Oh, no, absolutely. I've had entire meals of stinky tofu. I've had stinky tofu steamed. I've had stinky tofu fried. I've had it in a casserole. On the Vice show, Fresh Off the Boat, we went to a restaurant on Old Street in Taiwan that specialized in all variations of stinky tofu.
Do you think that certain Taiwanese dishes have been co-opted?
Yeah, you know, the pork bun was the one that I saw co-opted and appropriated, and people were not giving it credit in around like 2007, 2008. You know, of course, Momofuku popularized the pork bun.
And as opposed to the other kind of pork bun, chashubao.
Yeah. Chashubao is the Cantonese pork bun, and it's a closed one with the red pork inside, and that's a very, very good distinction because a lot of people come to Bauhaus and they ask for chashubao, and I would tell them, you know, we're Taiwanese, we do guabao. Guabao is the open one like a taco. And it, you know, I loved seeing people's excitement for the pork bun initially, but I really felt they needed to know where it came from because it came from Taiwan. People have been there making it since the 50s. It was a signature item of Taiwanese cooking.
But not all pork buns are equal.
No, not all. Not all.
So
pork buns
what do people get wrong?
Well, the thing is I saw it being made and it was being roasted, and roasting is not a technique that we use very often in Taiwanese or Chinese cooking. And then it had like the two kind of pickles on there, and it was wiped with hoisin sauce, and that way you're kind of not cooking the flavor into the meat, and it's not as tender as it could be if you braised it. So we wanted to do it the old way, where it's red cooked like Mao's pork.
That sounds almost like Peking duck.
Yes.
Only done with pork. That's
yes.
What they're doing.
Yes, exactly.
Would it bother you to see someone who was not Taiwanese cooking in a Taiwanese restaurant?
No, it would not. I have my staff is primarily black and Caribbean working at the restaurant. We have a Canadian guy named Liam who cooks as well. And we have different people. So, no, it does not bother me at all. I like the Bruce Lee method where, you know, people didn't want Bruce Lee to teach people kung fu. I love that Bruce Lee taught other people kung fu. You want to share your culture. You want people to come to it. But you also want to be the one teaching so that they learn to respect and they learn to acknowledge and they learn to preserve, because it's different to say everybody can cook it versus I'm going to take this, appropriate it, and then put it on a square plate and adjust it for a palate, say, in the West Village or somewhere else. You want people to embrace the craft and embrace the culture, but then continue its story on the trajectory that it's on.
Because you can take a dish from any culture and say, well, this is Cantonese, this is Taiwanese, this is French, but actually it isn't, because you've just done your take on it to a point where it no longer really has the most basic aspect of the dish.
Yes. And
it's lost the soul of the dish.
Exactly. It's lost its character and its identity. And that's what I think is heartbreaking to people of color is and it's like gentrification. Once you feel like you cannot participate in the culture anymore and it's a culture that you brought, that's heartbreaking. You know, when people in Bed-Stuy feel like they cannot participate in Bed-Stuy any longer, that's heartbreaking. For me to see a Taiwanese or Chinese dish taken away from me and I can't enjoy it then, and I feel left out, I think that's what really hurts people.
Are you amused when you see a new fad develop? For example, there was a time when there were these Maria's bakeries all over the city because the name was the name of a famous bakery in Hong Kong. Now we see bubble tea everywhere.
Yeah. You know, bubble tea started in a place in central Taiwan, in Taizong. And
so it's a Taiwanese?
Yeah, bubble tea is a Taiwanese thing. Bubble milk tea, yes, absolutely. And I love – bubble tea was one of the first crossover dishes from Taiwan. And I remember in the early 2000s when it was prevalent in New York, I was very, very proud to see people engaging bubble tea. It's the smallest things, but – it was – bubble tea in a lot of ways was Jeremy Lin before Jeremy Lin.
What led you to open up your own restaurant?
What led me to open up my restaurant was that it was a number of factors.
And naming it a name that's a pun on a German word.
Yes, yes. And I did the pun because I always admired the principles of Bauhaus, which efficiency, sustainability. It was just like logical design. I really liked that a lot. One of the factors was I wanted to promote Taiwanese culture and cuisine and identity. I didn't feel there were many people doing that. I also just wanted to tell my personal family story through food. And restaurants were a place that I felt Asians were allowed to do that.
We don't have much time, but I wonder what you think of crowdsourced reviewing websites like Yelp.
We read Yelp every day, just in case somebody says something of value. But for the most part, it's overly vindictive and personal, and I don't listen to everything, but I take it all in and I acknowledge all of it. And I do read every single Yelp review.
Well, they do give the reviewers a chance to vent. But I guess if they vent with intelligence and actually say something you think, oh, gee, we really blew that, then you're going to listen to it. And if they vent stupidly, like this is not what I'm used to, what we get in Des Moines, then you just ignore it.
Yeah, no, you have to be smart about it. But I think it would be wrong to totally ignore a group of people that have something to say.
Thank you so much for being on our show again, Eddie Huang, who is the proprietor of Bauhaus Restaurant on
14th Street between 2nd and 3rd Ave.
And his memoir is called Fresh Off the Boat. It is published by Spiegel & Grau.
Thank you.